Is such a powerful thing because, and when I say the word community, it could be 2 to 3 people, right? And as big as however many. But community is such a powerful thing because you could only connect in community, right? Like, I mean, I guess you can connect with yourself, you know, but like the idea of interacting with someone different from you would require somebody else. It's where you grow, right? Like people who are alone or in solitary confinement, like regress. And then people who are around other people grow, you know, towards something. It's where we learn, you know, we learn from each other. It's where we learn to lead. You can't lead unless there's another person. Like, it requires, and you can't serve someone unless there's another person. And you can't be discipled unless there's another person. So, like, it's this construct that literally becomes, like, part of the part of our growth process, like almost photosynthesis, right? Like it's our version of a growth process in which we acquire what we need from an external thing. It's the only place where we can experience the glorious experience of acts of love, sacrifice, and service, right? Because sacrifice is worship. When the Israelites would go out and sacrifice, it was an act of worship. As a matter of fact, when you read Exodus, when God charges Moses, he tells him to lead the people of Israel that they might go sacrifice on a mountain. And the whole idea of their freedom was linked to a sacrifice. We are going out to sacrifice somewhere. So sacrifice is worship. Service is worship. Again, you know, when you look at the Old Testament, the Levites served in the temple. There was a process to it. People were served. There were exchanges that occurred, and that was the act of worship that God invited his people to. And then love is worship because affection has to exist in it, right? How many times did God say, you know, your heart is far from me, right? Like, you're doing all this stuff, but your heart's far from me. So it's like community provides the context in which we can sacrifice for someone else, in which we can serve someone else and someone can serve us, in which we can exchange affection, right? And the whole idea of getting together on Saturday night is to create that, right? But that doesn't always happen, right? Because in many church structures, including ours, it's all too easy to walk in, not talk to anyone, walk out, right? And it gives you the impression of community. Well, I was around people, you know, but you might as well have been at Starbucks with your headphones in, you know, like for all that did for you. So it requires a level of just sort of intention, like you have to be intentional. The context of community is the only place where our gifts and talents can mature and we can receive any sense of satisfaction of a job well done. It's like we can paint a painting and really like it, but what about that feeling when someone looks at it and goes, whoa? And it's the only metric system we often have to measure how far we've grown, right? Like, I would imagine for Rachel, Kim, Abigail, and Laura, who lived with each other for a prolonged period of time, that you guys might be able to say, this is where I was, and this is where I am now as a person. And you might be even able to point out to places where you were influenced by the other person, right? Marriage is the same way. I think of, like, where Alicia and I were 10 years ago and how we, you know, our relationship became a marker of our growth, you know? It even becomes a reflector of that maturity because someone can speak back to us like, yeah, you have become so much better at that. A perfect example that you guys might laugh at me, we were out for pizza yesterday, and I don't even know how, like, the conversation started, but I noticed after I said something, my wife and Laura had kind of an interesting reaction towards me, and I had to ask the question, like, okay, like, apparently my apology wasn't that great. I was like, in all honesty, if you had to rate my apology language, what would you say it is, right? Like, on 1 to 10, Laura's like, honestly, a 4. And, like, my wife is like, a 5, maybe, you know? And I was just like, what was it? Was it the other way around? You rated me a little higher? Okay, I obviously wasn't listening. So I'll have to ask what my listening range is. You know? But I remember just having to sit there and go, ow, okay, go on. Like, let me feel this right now. I have never in my life realized I was that bad at apologizing. You know, I've been told in the past that I was too quick to apologize, so it came off as insincere, because I was apologizing way too fast, and I was still angry at my while I was apologizing, and then I've been told I was too slow at apologizing. So I was like, well, I've got to be somewhere, you know what I mean? Turns out I'm just bad at it. Like, I'm not even, like, and then I focus too much time explaining myself, as I'm doing right now. Like, so, you know, but I remember in that moment, I'm going, wow, like, I would not have known that unless I was willing to sit and let someone say that and, like, hear it. You know, and like really sit with it. I could not have that by myself. What am I apologizing to me for? You know what I mean? Like, I know my own intentions and I know what I'm at, right? And so it's a reflector of maturity and growth. It's also why, because I think service, sacrifice, and all those things are critical to community, it's also why I think like hiatuses or times of like rest and break can while they're good, can become detrimental. You know, when we're in a hiatus or a vacation for very long, we become stagnant, you know, because we're no longer giving. And what people don't realize, and this is true about putting money in the offering box or whatever, what we fail to recognize is that sacrifice and service is literally the exhale of the body. That the outpouring of God is the inhale, and the exhale is when we do something for someone. We're releasing what's inside of us. And for many of us, we look at an optional thing we don't have to do, and then we complain that our breathing is off. So like love only functions through an exchange of giving and receiving. And while yes, we can receive love, and that's a good feeling, the other half of experiencing love is giving it. And we lose that. So like sometimes when a person takes a break or when they're not doing ministry or when they're not whatever, and I understand those, like we go through seasons of just like, I need to like refocus and kind of see things differently again. We also become a little selfish because then like, where are we giving of ourselves? This is a season where I receive. So I'm just going to receive and receive and receive and receive and receive. And eventually I'm comparing all the things I'm receiving, right? And I'm going, well, I like this one more than I like that one. And the person on the outside is like, you haven't given in so long. Like, and you're telling me, you know, it's almost like someone feeding you and you're complaining about what you're getting. Like, we become sort of selfish in that regard, which is why I think in our community and so many others, there's always that push of like, where's your sacrifice? Where's your service? It's not just because it's like we want something out of you at all, as much as like, if you want to experience love, it's in that give or take. It really is in that give or take. Alicia and I are about to celebrate 10 years of being married. Yeah, yeah, whoa. Woo, whoa, all of it, right? Like, that's good. And yeah, the fact that I did anything in my life longer than 2 months like is a testimony in and of itself. With my attention span. And I look at the things that I prioritized at the beginning of my marriage and what I thought, like where my fears were and the things I was concerned for versus where I'm at now. And I recognize that the love that I was taught, what I saw my parents model, was what they wanted to receive and not what they wanted to give. Most times when we ask someone, hey, especially when I do marriage counseling with people, what do you like about the person you're with? 9.8 times out of 10, with like the rare exception, that's a horrible ratio, but more often than not, it's always the things they receive. She's awesome, she's kind, she's great with my parents, it's all the things that they're receiving, right? And it's only couples that have been together for a long time that ever comment on, I was a hot mess. Like, you know, like I recognize through this relationship, like how much I've grown and like how much I've had to learn about myself in serving this individual and what I realized, what I endured and what it took and it's that side of it, because it's suddenly in the context of commitment, when you're committed to people, where you learn that exchange, where you figure that stuff out. Parenting is the same way, right? It's one of the few relationships you have where you're literally just giving, right? And then the idea is to mature your child into the giving and receiving process so that you enter into a new stage of your relationship with your parent. And it is sort of that maturity. And I look at my relationship with my wife, and I can say that love for me has matured, or the definition of love has matured into a healthier perspective, because now the word defines me offering something and me working through stuff versus like me reaping a ton of benefits and like having it as a trophy. Like, this is my trophy wife. You know, like, she does everything I ask, and, like, I don't have to do anything, and I never feel bad. And apparently, I'm a great apologizer. Like, you know, I'm just really fantastic at it, and, you know, I'm a 10. I'm rated a 10 on all things, you know. So, did that sound like a Donald Trump impression for a second there? Like, am I the only one who was like, why am I hearing a Trump voice right now? Sorry, and I almost didn't say anything, but then I would then ask people later, and no one would know what I was asking about. What up, Joel? Hey. Yeah. I was doing a Donald Trump impression, apparently. Totally by accident. So, sorry from the top. So, this is a good time to check my notes again. That. Okay, I said that part. Okay, I said the exhale thing, right? Stretch us. Okay, said that part. Okay, here we go. Part two. So while community is the place where we're able to sort of mature and grow as believers, and it is a place where we should make service, sacrifice, receiving love as a consistent, regular process like breathing, right? And let me be, by the way, real quick, as a caveat, when I mean sacrifice and service, I don't mean something you like or something that you're just good at. That's just work, right? And I don't mean just something you get something in return. Right? Because it's too easy for me to go to work my job, get my paycheck, and feel like that was sacrifice. That was an exchange. Like, I did something to get something back. I truly mean selflessness. Like, when I say the word sacrifice, it's like I'm literally doing this whether or not I receive anything, right? Like, while I 100% believe and agree that Hebrews 11:6, I got it tattooed, so I'm with you, right? Like, I totally 100% believe that we should believe that God is, but that also he's a rewarder of those who seek him diligently. So 100% God is a rewarder, but there is an aspect of our sacrifice that does not enter into that place of like, I want something back. And so when I use the word sacrifice, I don't want us to think of just things we get something in return. I really do mean like we lost something here. Right? Like we offered up something, we invested something, and we're not necessarily expecting a return. So that exchange exists there. What makes community difficult is that it's the first thing we reject when we suffer an injury. It's the first thing we throw away. We don't stop going to work. We don't stop drinking Starbucks. We don't stop eating. We don't stop. When we go through something or we feel anything, the first thing we tend to stop is our vulnerability and our connection to community, our sacrifice to whatever that looks like. That doesn't have to be church. It could be a club you're a part of or something you do at any context of a group of people. It's the first thing we do. We kind of pull away and lick our wounds. And we just kind of like, we no longer want to be a part of it. You know, there a sense of mistrust might even begin to set in, right? We lack vulnerability because we don't want to trust people. And then we get upset when they're not vulnerable with us, right? Like, we stop trusting other people to kind of speak into our lives. For many of us, we might stop asking for help, right? Like, we no longer trust someone to offer us help or any kind of aid. So we just kind of, again, sort of separate, lick our own wounds. And literally the context in which we can get better becomes the very thing we reject. It happens in marriages. It happens with kids and their parents. The person you should talk to and say something to is the person you don't say anything to. How often do we hear stories of a child being molested and the parent doesn't find out until years later? Right? And it's like, well, what happened? There was a mistrust there somewhere. I experienced something. I didn't feel comfortable sharing it, right? Or how often do relationships end up that way? It's like, well, I didn't think you wanted to hear. I didn't think. So an injury happens. The first response is to sort of reject community out of a sense of, like, self-protection. And then something weird happens. We then realize we need community, but we only want it under our terms. And it becomes like a receiver. Okay, I'm injured, I'm hurt, I'll give you guys a chance, come do this for me. And people hear that, right? It's like, okay, you know, we might do that to a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or a friend, right? It's like, okay, but then that one time I called you, you didn't show up for me. It's like, oh, is this what this relationship became? You know, like, I now only exist for the self-expressed purpose of offering you something, right? And people can read that, right? We can read that when someone's just sort of, like, asking for stuff, and it's been a long time since they were really, like, offering something, you know? So even though we sort of reject community, we recognize its benefits, but we fail to recognize that its benefits are only as good as we're willing to participate in the exchange, in the act of service, right? It's sort of like, it's where full love comes from. It's where we begin to, again, feel that, like, growth, that reflection. That. And I say that as a challenge because, you know, Abigail during worship briefly commented on, like, do we have, you know, if we have heavy hearts tonight or if we're going through stuff. I say that because Laura and I were having a discussion recently this week, and Laura's a part of the Encounter Weekends where she gets people together and they work through issues and problems. And she said that it is common that at the 6th to 7th month mark since the encounter that people start feeling stress and regression. That the things that they were free from and, like, experiencing, like, lightness becomes a thing that they start battling. And that most common, the first thing they do is isolation. And it just expedites the regression, you know, versus what makes encounter or the experience of encounter so powerful, it's people coming together to be vulnerable and have an exchange, you know? And so I say that as sort of really a challenge to our hearts tonight, that it's all too easy in our culture to be focused on our friends, our needs, our wants, our future, our calling, where we want to be, and lose all sense of giving and think that we're living healthy lives and then wondering why we're dissatisfied and then wondering why we lose that sense of it. You know, I remember when we were down in Haiti after the earthquake, we were only given 2 meals a day, breakfast and lunch. And good God, was I hungry in the evening time. Like, it got to the point where, like, we had these, like, military convoys were coming in the area and they were giving us MREs. And I was like, this is, like, whatever. Like, mix it all up. I just wanted food because I just got so used to, like, eating food. Like, every evening I eat. And I can't tell you how many times I complained in the past about having this meal, that meal, whatever. But then in the absence of it, it's like, I'll take spaghetti. Like, God, please show up as spaghetti right now, like, into my life, and I will stop being ungrateful. I recognize, Lord, right, in the absence of not having it, I suddenly created value for it, right? But then I get it that in our consumer culture, right, like what capitalism sort of creates is a consumer culture where our preferences are preferred, right? We lose all sense of giving. And it's much harder in our culture, in our community, to choose things like fasting and choose things like pushing away from excess in order to step into the place of sacrifice. But it's the very thing that was modeled as, this is what's good for you. You need to exhale. You're holding your breath. And what you don't need is more air. What you need is to let go of the air that's, you know, inside you. And it's like, no, but then I'll have nothing. Right. It'll be great. Like, it'll be so great. Because then you can receive something. And then your expectation levels of what you might expect from other people will drop. And then you'll start realizing that you've been projecting what you've been expecting of yourself on other people. Then you begin to realize that the judgment you've been feeling is a judgment you've been putting out there. Because now you're letting go, and now you're taking a step back, and now you can see the bigger picture, and now you can see the process. And I really do believe that we have to be a part of a natural circulation, not just for our personal lives, but as a community. That's why we've been asking, like, hey, guys, submit opportunities to serve our community so that this community can exhale and feel growth. You know, let's start living sacrificial lifestyles. Let's give to something. Let's serve someone. Let's do something that's boldly. Let's live vulnerable lifestyles where we are willing to open ourselves up to other people, regardless of being hurt or not. Let's model those things. That way we can re-engage in the place of inhaling and exhaling again. So we can re-engage in the place of that sense of liberty. The idea of things like, and I know a couple weeks back we talked about that moving into the end of the year, we want to talk about spiritual gifts and identify people's callings so that, you know, people can kind of step into those things that maybe they didn't know about themselves. But one of the things that I find so unique, and it comes from Luke 6, and it's before Jesus called the disciples. In Luke 6, it says that he went to a mountain and he prayed and he meditated about what was coming, right? And so here Jesus is. and he's praying, and it's the day before he picks his disciples, right? You know, did he turn in early? Did he get up early? Could he sleep that night? You know what I mean? But as he's praying and as he's going through that prayer process, he's fully acknowledging what he's asking from these 12. 11 of you are going to die. 10 of you, it'll be martyrdom. One of you will be suicide. The other one will go through unmeasurable torture. Yeah. You'll live most of your life often fearing repercussion from the acts of service you will do. I'm asking 12 people to live this way. To sleep in the dirt, to travel to strangers' houses, to put themselves out there all the time. But in that process, they'll experience the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. They'll experience the overwhelming love of God, right? Christianity wasn't defined as they'll buy homes and own 2 cars and work their fantastic jobs and get really great paychecks and an awesome pension at the end of their life. And, you know, and not that those things are bad, right? But like, what is it that we bought into? What is it that we believe in? What is it that we said yes to when we felt a call from Jesus, right? Was to live the circular, circulatory process of like receiving from God and pouring those things out onto others. And that's the thing that Paul in the Pauline letters teaches on, is like, I've learned to be satisfied with seasons of plenty and seasons of nothing. And it's like, because in all of that, I glory in Christ and Christ alone. He's recognizing that in this whole thing, there's this beautiful experience. When I think of my marriage, I think of both the high times and the low times, because in all of that, there's been this beautiful experience of two people serving each other. Like, it's been this amazing experience of that. When I think of, like, my kids being born, holy crap, was that stressful. Like, so much is happening. I'm totally new to this. Please stop. Like, everyone just put the baby back. Let's just, I need 10 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? I think of that. But really, when it finally ends, it was so great that it was a back and forth. That there were times where it was difficult and times where it was easy. And that somewhere in there, two people that love each other went through this process. And were invited into that bridegroom experience with God, where it's like, come join me in this journey of just sacrifice and love, of giving and receiving, of worship within the context of community. What if I don't like that person? Really don't care. What if they're a different Enneagram number? For those of you who are into that, like, you know, like, it's like, what's an Enneagram? No. It's like, really don't care. It's like, good. I hope you argue. I hope you disagree. And I hope you learn humility. And I hope it hurts. And when it hurts, I hope you reach out and try again. And I hope that you learn endurance and perseverance. And I learned that in that place, you discover that when you're at the end of the rope, there's more, so much more. I hope that when you're hungry, God will multiply the loaves and the fishes. When you don't know what to say, he'll show up and say something. That you'll actually get to experience the fullness of God and not just the part of the buffet you wanted for yourself. But that you got all of it, even when there wasn't a buffet. And so really, that's all I really have to say for tonight. It's just like, as you guys leave today, like, if you're not already doing it, like, get back into that rhythm of, like, giving and receiving of yourself. Get out of the selfishness of, like, your wants, your need, your desires. Like, get out. It's about Jesus. Like, I read a quote the other day that says, I hope that you serve and sacrifice Jesus, and that after you live a life of great exploits, that you are forgotten. And I was like, ooh, no. I agree with 80% of that. That last line, if we can cross that one out, I'm like, if I'm going to sacrifice that much, I need a plate on a wall or like a book series to go on that I wrote. I mean, come on. Like, somebody, like, can people, someone remember me? It's like, no, man, like, that's not what it's about. Because somewhere in this journey, it's about something else. And that's the fullness of God you've been called to. And that will be the greatest satisfaction you'll ever have. And I just want to invite you guys into that process. So can we pray in this abrupt end?